speaker is Sherry Tubach. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've only seen it in print. She is the Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology and Response at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. She's been there since 2007 as a foodborne epidemiologist and a senior epidemiologist. Prior to working at Kansas Department of Health and Environment, she worked for the USDA as a microbiologist and received her Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry in 1995, Bachelor of Science in Biochem in 1998, Master's of Public Health in 2006 from Kansas State University. So welcome. We look forward to hearing you talk.
And once, let me know if you can't hear me, but I think I'm loud enough. Today I'm going to be discussing an outbreak that we investigated with two county health departments, and it occurred last summer in 2014, and it occurred among a community with fairly low vaccination coverage. But not only did they have low vaccination coverage, many of them didn't even know what their vaccination coverage was, if they'd ever received an MMR. Of course, measles is an acute viral respiratory disease. The clinical characteristics of measles are pretty specific. They have the prodrome with fever, malaise, cough, cries, the conjunctivitis, some coplic spots, and then it progresses into a maculopapular rash. And the rash is pretty characteristic, starting at the hairline and ears and moving downward and out. The incubation period is 7 to 21 days, and the infectious period is 4 days before to 4 days after onset of rash. And so many times a person will be contagious about a day prior to the onset of that prodrome. Measles was declared eliminated in the United States in 2000, and it's because there is a fairly good high two-dose coverage. Even in Kansas, we have very high two-dose coverage. And also, measles surveillance and response is fairly robust. In Kansas, it is a four-hour reportable disease by telephone to the KDAG, and that enables us to notify the health departments and begin a very rapid response and investigation. However, imported cases and outbreaks continue to occur. This is the number of measles cases per year in the United States, and after elimination, it was really rare that we even reached 100 cases per year in the United States. Starting in 2011, there were 222 cases and 17 outbreaks, and this was the highest number that we had seen in the United States since elimination was declared. In 2014, they had over 600 cases, and I'll talk about a few of those in a minute. And now in 2015, we're already at 173 cases by the end of May. So it looks like 2015 is going to be a pretty rough measles year as well. So in 2014, there were 23 measles outbreak, and I'm sure all of you are aware of the huge measles outbreak in Ohio associated with an Amish community. But we had a lot of outbreaks associated with importation of measles, and particularly from the Western Pacific region, where they had over 80,000 cases. The Philippines was really affected. They had over 20,000 cases, but there were several states from the Federated States of Micronesia that also were experiencing measles outbreaks in the same time that we were investigating our cases. This graph shows the measles by year in Kansas, and we only had one case of measles in 2006, and then starting in 2011, every year except for 2013, we have had measles-associated outbreaks. In 2011, it was associated with a daycare, and there were a lot of infants that were misdiagnosed, and so we never really were able to identify a true index case in that outbreak because there was such a delay in diagnosis from physicians. In 2012, it was associated with an international adoption, and then the outbreak I'm going to be discussing today occurred in 2014, and we had one case that was exposed in one of our counties, but actually was a Nebraska resident. So Kansas City, Missouri was investigating a measles outbreak, and it was becoming a quite large outbreak during May and June of 2014, and they had identified an index case. It was a four-month-old with travel to the Federated States of Micronesia with symptom onset in early May of 2014. And on June 3rd, the Johnson County Health Department was notified by a local hospital that a child was presumptively diagnosed with measles. And this outbreak was initiated and ongoing when, on July 7th, we were notified by a local hospital in Sedgwick County that a child was presumptively diagnosed with measles. And of course, we immediately notified the local health department, and they had also received a report of another child with measles. At this point, we did not know if the two outbreaks were related or not. Of course, we used the CSTE measles case definition to classify cases. We conducted in-person interviews for this outbreak investigation. We found that we were able to obtain a little bit better information to ascertain onset date, symptoms, places of exposures, and to definitely identify contacts. Contacts were notified and treated if warranted, and recommendations were provided if they did become symptomatic what to do, to call the health department or to call KDHE. In Kansas, we do have an administrative regulation that each person with measles shall remain in isolation for 4 days following rash onset, and that a susceptible person in a school, child care facility, or family daycare home shall be vaccinated within 24 hours, or they must be excluded for 21 days. But of course, our public health recommendations is any exposed susceptible contacts should avoid public settings and limit their exposures for 21 days. Serology testing was performed through a private laboratory. Nasopharyngeal and throat swabs were collected and sent to the Kansas Health and Environmental Laboratory for PCR testing for measles. And we forwarded some of those specimens on to the CDC for genotyping. The median age of our cases were 21 years, and the range was 2 months to 43 years. We had 8 or 57% female. 3 were in Johnson County, and 11 were in Sedgwick County, and that does include the Nebraska resident. We had 12 or 86% Pacific Islander, and 2 or 14% were white. Of course, all had rash and fever. That's the clinical case definition. We had 71% with cough, and 50% with conjunctivitis and coryza. We had 2 hospitalized and no deaths. This shows the number of cases by illness onset date and county of residence. And you can see that our outbreaks were really pretty separate. And when we look at the transmission of measles in this outbreak in a few minutes, you'll see sort of why that is. Our first case occurred May 26th. And that case and the case that occurred on the 29th of May had numerous exposures to a quarantined household in Missouri. And then our last case in Johnson County occurred on June 8th, and we did not have any further transmission in the Johnson County area, which is in the Kansas City metro area. Our index case for Sedgwick County occurred on June 21st, and there were multiple exposures to multiple households and multiple locations with secondary transmission. Finally, on July 15th was our last case. 1 was fully vaccinated, 3 were unvaccinated, 6 had unknown vaccination status, and then 4 were infants and they were too young to be vaccinated. So the next 2 slides, I'm going to show you sort of the transmission of measles throughout Johnson County and Sedgwick County. Of course, as I stated before, we only had 1 household affected in the Johnson County area. We had 3 confirmed cases out of 8 household members, and we had no further transmission, although this house had numerous exposures to a house that was under quarantine in Missouri. They visited about 3 times a week. They were in part of a choir group, and they were practicing to get ready for a festival or fair. On June 9th through 11th, one of the residents of Sedgwick County visited another quarantined household in Kansas City, Missouri, and then traveled back to their home in Sedgwick County. Now, this is our Sedgwick County transmission, and it looks very complicated, but our index case onset was 622 and lived in a single household. That person did spread measles to another household, house 2, house 3, house 4, and house 5. And then also we had transmission at a restaurant where the person worked. We had a person who was friends with her and frequented the restaurant. And then we also had an infant that was there for only 1 day that she worked. Additionally, there was a person that worked in the kitchen that was a suspect case, and we were never able to get clinical information or do any testing with this individual. After the onset of illness on a number of our cases, and it ranged from July 2nd to July 4th, they all attended a softball tournament on July 4th. And there were numerous reports of individuals holding an ill child. They were playing with the child, and there were a lot of other individuals exposed. So we had further onset from the softball tournament on July 4th to a couple of persons in household 5. And then we had a suspect case that was exposed to our index case that further exposed someone in household 6. And the only reason we found out about that particular case was that the wife of the case on in household 6 stated that this person had come around her husband and had exposed him, and he was symptomatic with measles. But we were never able to identify this person or interview this person. We also had another transmission to a case down in Texas. In Johnson County, there was a hospital and outpatient clinic that were potential sites of exposure, and we sent letters to all of those that were exposed. In Sedgwick County, there were 2 hospitals, a hotel, and a daycare. Once again, letters were sent out to all of those that were potentially exposed to measles. There was an outpatient pediatric clinic, and we actually made phone calls to all of those exposed and offered immune globulin to any infant that was potentially exposed to measles. And then we actually had 2 restaurants where we had potential exposure, and we did send out press releases for both of them, but I'm going to talk about the second restaurant here on the next slide. So we had documented measles transmission, of course, among all of those households that I showed you a few slides ago, but also at the softball tournament. It was extremely difficult to get information about that softball tournament because it was just posted on Facebook, and anybody who wanted to come up could come up and play in the tournament. And they weren't really sure who all attended and from what states. We were able to identify 8 teams from Missouri, Nebraska, Texas, and Kansas, and we notified all of the state health departments in those states. And Texas and Kansas sent out press releases about that softball tournament. The restaurant where we had 3 persons with measles worked while ill, although we only had transmission to 2 individuals, and it was both from the index case. There was a potential suspect case in the restaurant as well, and so there was transmission to 3 persons. And we did send out a press release about that restaurant with all of those different dates where people worked while ill. The control measures we implemented were contact. Of course, we notified the contacts, as I stated prior. Sedgwick County Health Department held 2 vaccination clinics where they vaccinated 452 persons with the MMR vaccine. There were 11 contacts that received immunoglobulin. There were 7 infants exposed at the pediatric office, and there was 1 household contact that was less than 1 years of age, and they did later end up developing measles. And there were 3 household contacts. One was a pregnant female with an unknown vaccination status, and it was too late for her to receive the vaccine. And then there were 2 other adults in the household that took care of an infant that could not be vaccinated. This was the first time since I have been at KDHE where a health department has actually issued a legal order of quarantine. We did have a family that was scheduled to fly out to Florida, and we wanted to make sure that they did not get on that flight and spread measles to another state. So there was legal orders of quarantine issued for that family, and they were able to get refunds for their flights, so we were sure that they were not on those flights. The second one was a person needed it in order to not be fired from her job. The Sedgwick County Health Department nurses and the Johnson County Health Department nurses had daily visits with all of the households involved. And this was to interview potential cases, to ascertain for any additional symptoms. We knew that there was a lot of spread in this community, and they also carried with them supplies to actually collect specimens so that they were able to right away get specimens from these individuals. 12 tested positive for measles, 8 were PCR positive, 4 IgM positive, and 4 the, The four specimens that were forwarded to CDC for genotyping were typed to be B3, which was what was circulating in the Federated States of Micronesia. So there were several challenges associated with this outbreak. There was a lot of non-compliance with the quarantine orders, and it wasn't necessarily that they went to work, but they just didn't stay at home. They were just going to, they had all of these households were in a similar area in Sedgwick County, and there was a lot of intermixing, there was a lot of visiting, and a lot of times the nurses would get there and they would find that the persons were not at home. There was also some distrust of investigators, and we knew that this was going to be the case because of what Missouri was experiencing at the time. And it was one of the reasons we did not get law enforcement involved when we found out that the individuals under a legal order of quarantine were not staying at their home. We did do in-person interviews to try to help with this distrust, but still we had difficulty getting the person who organized the softball tournament to call us back. You would interview the mother and the father, and they were saying that they, you know, went to church. No, they didn't go to church. Well, we went to this household. No, we didn't. So there was a lot of just misinformation, and it was very difficult to really, you know, get exactly who they could have exposed and where they could have gone. There was extensive contact investigations. The softball tournament with limited list of teams, players, and attendees, and we knew that there were exposure there, and we knew that there was transmission there at the softball tournament. There was transmission at a restaurant from an employee to two patrons, and it was difficult to determine how broad we should notify the hotel. A housekeeper had worked there. We ended up notifying everybody who had stayed at the hotel while she was working, and all of the staff. There was some successes. We did stand up ICS, and that was implemented at both KDHE and at the Sedgwick County Health Department. And I think that really helped us to really focus our resources and really provide very structured investigation. Luckily, the community was very insular. They really sort of hung out with themselves. They didn't stay necessarily at home, but they just went to the homes of their neighbors, which was part of that community. And there was very limited transmission outside the community. We had great collaboration between Kansas and Missouri. Our lab performed a lot of the testing, and also the Kansas Immunization Program really assisted in getting those vaccination clinics set up and going. We had numerous conference calls with Missouri because they were investigating the same outbreak that we were, and so we had almost daily conference calls with them to help with the investigations. And the control measures really did help to stop this outbreak. It was less than a month before our index case in Sedgwick County until the end of the outbreak. And I don't have a slide on this next thing, but some future things that Kansas is doing, we're developing two posters that we're going to be distributing to hospitals. And one is really geared at clinicians to assess for travel history, and one is really geared to put in patient areas to assess, to make sure that they are aware that they need to talk to their healthcare provider about where they have traveled. I'm sure everyone has heard, globally, a disease is only a plane ride away, and we see this with MERS-CoV, we see it with Ebola, and we see it with more so than not with measles. And we want to really encourage our healthcare providers and our physicians and our hospitals to really think travel history when they are assessing a patient. We have had numerous times where we've had delays in reporting because measles just wasn't on that differential list. And so we're hoping to get this out. We're starting up a new website on the KDHE website, and we're doing a Twitter feed. I don't know much about Twitter, but it's going to be hashtag Think Travel History. And so we're really hoping to educate our clinicians to really think outside of Kansas and think more globally. Thank you.
Just a couple minutes for questions, so if there are a couple questions.
Hi, my name is Kate Dresner from NACHO. I have a question about workers. Does campus have any regulations about food workers working with notifiable conditions, and have you guys thought about, you know, trying to increase paid sick leave for like food handlers to kind of, you know, keep working.
Right, and I think, you know, unfortunately we see this with a lot of different diseases, not just VPDs. I mean, there is a lot of individuals in certain jobs, you know, restaurants, hotel staff, that just don't get sick leave. And, you know, as a health department, I don't know what we could do to really remedy that. But, you know, so that definitely is a problem. I mean, we were able to do a legal order of quarantine, so the one person was able to get their job. But we see this with a lot of different diseases, not just measles or VPDs. And then we do have the Kansas Food Code. It does have employee health regulations where they have to stay home if they have certain diseases. But it's really difficult, unless you know about them, to keep them home.
Erin Murray, California Department of Public Health. I was wondering if you did any serologic testing of immunity among the contacts, and I'm particularly interested in the moms of the very young infants, because it sounds like you had a 2-month-old and a 4-month-old case, to know if
right.
they had received vaccine or had any evidence of immunity or disease.
You know, we did assess immune status. We did not do any serological testing on contacts, but, you know, I think they would have developed measles having that close contact with the infants if they had not been vaccinated previously. But in this community, it was really, and I'm not sure if it's just sort of distrust, I don't want you to know, you know, anything about me, or if it was truly, I don't know if I've received the vaccine or not.
Ron Balahari from the immunization program in Hawaii. And the one question I had is, were you able to contact the Federated States of Micronesia, knowing this particular population, to try to get information or language barriers or anything that may have occurred with the distrust that you were talking about?
Right. No, we didn't reach out to the Federated States of Micronesia. We were working really closely with Missouri, and they have a huge, community there. And I don't believe it was a language barrier. Almost everyone spoke English, and that is one of the languages spoken in Federated States of Micronesia. But so I don't think it was really a language barrier. I think it was maybe a misunderstanding. And Missouri was seeing the same thing that we were. It was, you know, they would go to visit, and as soon as they would leave, the people would leave. And I think they just didn't understand that, you know, stay at home and don't go anywhere, or don't have any visitors. And that was something. They might stay at home, but then they would have visitors that would come into their home.
Thank you for those great questions.
Thank you for a very interesting